are on the air again. Today is Sunday. It's the Q Report on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, with
Patrick Martins.
Patrick, really, you're the one who's supposed to be doing this on the Q because this is really your show.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
This is nothing. I just have fabric in my life, which is why we call this the Q Report, because it studies the fabric of everyday life.
That's right. Q standing for quotidian.
It also stands for quoto. Now, I have given you a cat. You are going to keep the name of the cat, correct?
I am going to keep the name of the cat, and I'm going to keep the cat.
How do you pronounce it?
Koro.
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 But it's actually K. The way you spelled it was K-O-U-R-O.
That is how it is spelled.
And it's short for Kurobata.
Korobuto.
Korobuto
pork is the way the... I don't know if the Japanese spell it. I think the Japanese just spell it K-O-R-O. But I don't think
I've seen it K-U-R-O.
That gave enough energy to the kind of silent vowel area.
Well, sometimes we just call him Cuckoo.
I'm sorry that he scratched your whole family.
I was like slashed to a ribbon.
Has Curtis interacted with it at all?
Yeah, Curtis loves him.
Really?
Yeah, he's great. Okay. Anyway, so...
So what's happening in the quotidian culture around us, Katie?
Well, in the quotidian culture Sports. Around us right now, we actually have a great show lineup for today. Our first guest is William Bryant Logan, He's a tree doctor.
I want to find out if they can qualify him as a real doctor, because I have a back problem.
Okay, well, we'll get him to operate on you with one of his circular saws.
Oh, jeez. I know.
He won't have to climb up any ladders.
Do we truly love trees if we still use circular saws?
In my dotage, I hope to have the opportunity to actually build my own arboretum, because my favorite thing about gardening is trees. I love trees more than I love flowers by a long shot.
Vassar, I think to be called an arboretum, you need a certain amount of tree varieties, like 1,000 or something like that. I mean, we can ask Bill about that.
I think Bill is capable of answering that question.
But Vassar is definitely qualifies as an arboretum, and I know it had these like Japanese trees that were given to it by an alumni and all that. So
Bryn Mawr is
just
another college
campus with
amazing trees.
What you're talking
trees.
About. Arboretum is not easy.
No, it isn't. So, Bill, what does qualify for being an arboretum?
And then we will have Mike Edison on, who will talk about a whole world of like
the underbelly
of society, which I am a member of in some way. I mean, I think that's
you are so not.
No,
what are you talking about?
It's a little bit the pagan. You know, when I graduated from Vassar, I only had one job.
Oh, yeah, he graduated from Vassar and he's in the underbelly.
Well, when I made my first million, I worked as a researcher at a TV show called Tilt 23 and a Half, and then I worked the 5 a.m. to noon shift at a bakery, a Taylor's Baker on 18th. And so, you know, you do get to see those subway rides. And also
That's
being born
true.
And raised in Manhattan, you know, you can't be ignorant of any belly, you know, whether it's under or over. So you learn to accept all of them.
I certainly do. Why only just yesterday I had a brief encounter with my favorite bum on the Upper West Side. This
and
is a guy that I've known for 20
not,
years.
Is not the right word for him then.
He's an indigent.
Okay.
And does not...
An itinerant performer, perhaps?
No, he has no such qualifications. This is a man who, you know, I don't know what his story is, but I have known him for 25 years. He was...
Do you give him money now and then?
Every time I see him, and he used to hang out outside the Broadway Butcher when I was working as a butcher. And he would always hang out, and he was kind of out of it at the time. He was really disintegrated mentally. And it was the bad old days when everybody was begging anyway. But he never had his fly up. He always had his wang hanging out. Mm-hmm. So and he was chasing our customers away. So we
would pay him?
Get lost, man. You know, yeah, we'd give him a few bucks. Get lost. Go dangle your wang somewhere else, please. So about 6 years ago, I was riding the subway north from the village, and damned if the guy didn't get into the car that I was sitting in. He looks at me, I look at him, and there's a moment of recognition, and he was quite integrated.
You actually recognized his wang
we
first.
He didn't have it hanging out for once. So I say, hey, how you doing? He's like, how are you? He says, he's wearing a pair of tuxedo pants and a sort of reasonable jacket. He sits down next to me. We shake hands. We have a nice little chat coming uptown. He gets off at the same stop. He's living on Manhattan Avenue. And as we get out of the train, he hits me up for a few bucks, par for the course. Mm-hmm. I say, sure. I give him the money. So anyway, I see him periodically. And in some days, he recognizes me. And he's all pulled together. And
well,
he's
in his honor, we have this Heritage Drop.
Hi, this is Moby. And you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Well, yesterday I ran into him. I got to finish this story.
I can't believe you wanted to. I don't want to do Kodo. Actually, this is very Mike
Edison. Please. He says, hey, miss, how you doing? I'm like, hey, how are you? What's going on? You looking good. I'm good. I'm good. But, you know, I really need something good, okay? So I have no small bills in my purse, right? I have a 10 and a 20. Mm-hmm. So I get out my 10 and I give it to him. And damned if the guy didn't give me a kiss.
Really?
Gave me a kiss. And then he said, and then I said, okay, see you around, man. Enjoy it. Don't spend it all in one place. Like at the liquor store right next to us. And as I'm walking down the block, I hear him going, ma'am, ma'am. And finally, I realized he wasn't hitting somebody else up for money. He was calling me. And I said, yeah, what's up, man? What do you want? He says, I got some wine back at my room. You want to come back and have a drink?
Brown chicken, brown cow.
I was like, you are sweet, buddy. That's so there's an nice underbelly that just, you know, he's just as sweet as pie, this guy. He's
my
really
homeless
adult.
People who I've kind of grown up with in my life, I would give them, you know, $20 every now and then, like a couple times a year. So that way they always knew to expect a surprise from me, but not consistency.
Well, that's, I think the answer is to say, you know, don't always expect me because I don't always have money, frankly. But anyway, we digress.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. But, you know your locals is sort of my mantra. I mean, I have a few people like that that are
including your
been
local trees.
That's
because
right.
They could be suffering.
And you would need.
And you don't want to be one of those people that calls Bill after it's too late.
That's right. You want to call Bill right up front as soon as you see your tree looking droopy.
So Bill Logan, urban arborist and author, also now documentarian with the documentary Dirt, which was at the Sundance Film Festival this February. Tell us, what are you? What is a tree doctor?
Well, I'm a lot of things. Tree doctor-wise, I love trees ever since I was a little kid. I was a little kid in California, and I climbed them. I tried to identify them. I walked in them. I sniffed them. I took things home and collected them, and I thought, Jesus, I can never make a living out of this.
What about trees? It was just you were amazed at their size. I mean, you're a big guy.
I like their size. I like their variety. I like the fact that they will live almost anywhere and survive almost anything. They're incredibly courageous entities because they can't move. Everybody else, if something bad happens, you can run away. Mm-hmm. Trees can't run away. Trees have to live where they are.
Forever, for a long period.
Well, as long as they can. And that's one of the things in New York City that made me want to have a tree company in New York City was to take care of these incredible creatures that we stick in these tiny holes.
And there are a lot of trees. People don't think that about New York. But do you have any idea of how many trees this...
Parks Department has the numbers, but they're certainly well over a million, million and a half.
Wow.
So not quite as many people, but and if you start counting out there where, you know, there are lands we don't know about in New York. Do you know what the made lands are?
Mm-mm.
Robert Moses, when he was rebuilding New York, had to do something with all the garbage. He would take it and in barges and send it to salt marshes and fill up salt marshes with garbage.
Great.
These
Talk
are called
about
the
your
made
wetlands.
Who would have thought Robert Moses could have done a thing like that?
But the interesting thing is that trees and plants are now growing on these so-called made lands. Some of them on things where you can still see the kind of tilting pieces of junk that come from the buildings that were there. Hmm. But it's trees that are very, very tough, like black locust. Black locust can grow anywhere except right after an atomic explosion. Mm-hmm. And they're growing, ailanthus are growing, but they're growing. And that's fantastic in New York. You count of those trees, probably many more in number.
What do trees do? I mean, why are they necessary? I mean, are there foods that are provided by trees that are only provided by trees? Or is
yes.
It, no, I know they are, but I mean, for survival. I mean, is it for the wood? Like, I mean, where are, how
what
are
about
trees,
our oxygen?
I mean, oxygen, but there's plants and there's other things.
Trees are an important component of that.
I'm talking really global ecosystem. Like, sure. Why are trees important?
Well, certainly there are. I mean, the recent study was done. You know, they're trying to calculate. There should be a heck of a lot more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than there is, given what we've been doing with fossil fuels. They're saying, why is there so little? How come there's so little? Or, well, not so little. There's a lot, but littler than there ought to be. And one of the main answers to that is trees. A part of it is simply our trees right around here. If you go like 5 minutes, 10 minutes out of New York City where it used to be farm fields, it ain't farm fields anymore. Mm-hmm. And in New York, in our ecosystem, if you leave a field open, trees will start growing. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to plant them.
They just happen.
They just happen, and they happen in succession. First, you get like Prunus chokecherry, Prunus virginiana, which grows like fury anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then you start to get pines, and sometimes if the land's really lousy, you get alders, and alders are nitrogen capturers. So they capture the nitrogen, their leaves fall, they fertilize the soil, and then bingo, here come the white pines, and then here come the birches. And then eventually you develop a mature forest of the northeast quadrant, which includes beeches, maples, hemlocks.
All the oaks.
Wow.
And oaks, yeah.
And that's very, Vermont was like that, right? I mean, I think someone once told me that they go through the forests of Vermont and find towns within it, but during the Civil War, maybe people left or something, and just in that brief time span, forest grows.
Yes.
And covers it.
Sure. Where I grew up in Rhode Island, all the trees, the original trees, had been cleared in the late 19th, early 20th century. The area was farmed, and then it was the farming went away, and the tree, it's all heavily forested again. It's second growth. You can see that they're not the huge, beautiful, big trees that you associate with first growth forests, but you know, it's a lot of sort of scrappy looking sassafras, mm-hmm. and oak, white oak, a lot of white oak, but there's mixed in, there's some maple, there's some beech, and those trees tend to be really big, like as if they had been left there when they farmed the territory, and then the other trees came back after the farming stopped.
Sometimes there are oaks are also often left because they're good boundary trees. They know they last a long time, and they're often found on boundary places because they often need more sun than the others. But those are a part of what's taking the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And then somebody recently did a study of the contribution of rainforest trees to carbon sequestration, and it's astonishing. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the number offhand, but just a huge amounts. We're, as I think the researchers said, we are getting a subsidy from these trees because they are mitigating the global damage we're doing. They're mitigating on a global scale by what they take out. So that's pretty astonishing.
That is pretty astonishing.
Well, it's a powerful incentive to suggest to those who live in rainforest countries that they may not really want to clear those for cattle as much as they think they might.
So now a tree doctor, like the... let's see, the Ghostbusters, I know why they called them, is because ghosts were, you know, like running around their houses or whatever in that movie. But like with the tree doctor, like when does one know? I mean, who calls you? Is it the city? Is it an individual with a little tree in that little hole right in front of their apartment building or what?
All those people.
All those people call you. And so do you have like a toll-free number or a website that people?
No, we do have a website. Yeah.
Which, what is that website?
It's www.urbanarb.com.
UrbanArb.com.
Hey, Bill, were you part of the cleanup effort in Central Park after that freak storm a couple weeks ago?
No, we were not. They have contract people there. Yeah, though we did a lot of cleanup for clients who were suffering from... And there have been a number of microburst situations around New York this year.
There was one on 106th Street.
So what happens? When is a high volume call period for you?
Well, after a storm, typically, because, I mean, these storms are, especially the microburst storms, come with winds that are atypical. I mean, many of the trees develop to survive huge wind events. So if the wind is coming from the direction they expect, even with a tremendous force, they can survive it. But it's when we get these strange winds that have downdrafts, violent down and updrafts, that's when disaster happens. And that's what's been happening with these summer storms. And after those, you know, we got clients calling, say, you know, that willow you took care of for us? Well, 3/4 of it is now lying between our house and our neighbor's house. Thank goodness it fell between them. So we get a lot of calls at that time. But we also, because we typically, and we're not that typical of tree companies in that way, we try to be proactive. We try to go out there and talk to people and make sure that their trees are as safe, as healthy, and as beautiful as they can be. So we often... You know, people call us to say, oh, well, we didn't have any damage or a few twigs fell because we had taken care of their things in advance.
Do you make house calls, Bill? I got a tree.
Yeah, we have to. Yes. My father was a doctor, and he was one of the last doctors in Northern California to make house calls.
Yeah. Wow. How about up to Rhode Island?
It's not impossible if the tree is interesting enough. We've gone as far as in Beacon, New York.
No kidding.
We went to take care of one of the largest Sargent's Weeping Hemlocks.
I have one of those.
Well, they all come from one place in the world.
Really?
They all come from Beacon Mountain in New York City. And one of them, it used to be that instead of collecting great art, if you thought you were rich and famous and wanted
people
to know
trees.
You would collect trees. And two of the great competitors in that were the guy who lived on this one place and his neighbor sergeant.
Incredible.
And they fought each other to have the best trees. Anyway, this guy's place was a drunk tank for many years, but now somebody has bought it and wants to take it. And they also have one of the great weeping beeches in the Northeast.
Really? Absolutely fascinating.
That's a beautiful tree. I have one of those, too, on my property in Rhode Island.
How would someone, like, I mean, I have a couple of trees on my block. I mean, I've always had dogs, so I've always been aware of all the trees in my neighborhood. How would I know if a tree is sick?
Off-color foliage, falling to leaves falling too early.
At an unusual time, okay.
Bare branches.
And does dog pee hurt them?
Probably to some extent. I think people over, you can. Now, it's a good idea not to let dogs pee on trees. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's the only place. I mean, if not there, they would have to do it in the middle of the sidewalk. I mean, some streets.
Better in the sidewalk than the tree because, you know, what happens because of massive salt, worse than dogs, is salt from winter road salt.
Oh,
that's really
that's
terribly
sort of,
damaging. It's massive quantities.
It's bad for the dogs, too. It gets in their paws.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Do your dogs wear those little booties?
Of course not. How dare you ask that?
Let's just shift focus for a second so that we don't run out of time before we get to talk about dirt. The Ecstatic Skin of the Earth. This is a book that
I do
Bill
want to
wrote.
Have Bill on because, I mean, I have another 100 questions.
Oh, I know.
About
well, you'll come back, right?
And all that. But
I would be happy. I will talk about trees
Brooklyn
for as long as you like.
Sundance is important. So, okay, tell
well,
us about the
because
big,
we want
famous
people to know not only about the documentary, but also about the book that spawned the documentary, Dirt, The Ecstatic Skin of the Earth. And then Bill has another fabulous book. And this is how
the
I met Bill.
The Ecstatic Skin of the Earth. That's such a funny
I met Bill because I did the publicity for his second book, which was called Oak, The Frame of Civilization, which I absolutely loved. And it was the story of how the oak tree has been a part of mankind's trajectory over the last, oh, I don't know, it went back several thousand
18,000 years.
Yeah.
Since the last ice age.
I mean, unbelievable. It was really a fabulous, fabulous book. And
were
I
the trees
all kinds
the
of really
same
cool things.
Pre-ice age?
Well, one doesn't know. Probably so. Yeah, but they certainly
probably just the same group of trees, just pre. Like they are like the dinosaurs or something that they survived.
Well, they retreated. Trees are real keepers. I mean, especially things like oaks are real keepers. I mean, basically, what they did during the Ice Age was they retreated. Mm. You know, from Northern Europe, say where they had been, they went way down, and they were hanging out in North Africa and the very south on the Mediterranean. The moment the Ice Age ended, they started coming back, and they did it both by pollen and squirrels, but mainly by blue jays. Blue jays and oaks have evolved as
so blue jays
as a couple.
Are the seed carriers.
They carry it farther. Squirrels carry a lot of them, but blue jays can carry them a mile, 2 miles, and they only recollect, once they buried them, about a third. They remember exactly where they buried things. A jay will come and land at a spot where it buried something a year ago and go right to the acorn and take it. But they only take about a third of them, so blue that jays. Leaves two-thirds of them.
That's pretty
Which
amazing.
Which is why we don't want the Blue Jay to disappear.
I do have, although maybe the team perhaps from the playoff race, but yes, the actual Blue Jay. But I did have one last question about the trees before we get to your... What is there? Is a certain tree that was native to the United States that had a blight and for 100 years...
Chestnut
trees, right. And are they coming back in the similar way?
Well, they've never gone. They've
what about
gone
the elm tree?
Well, the elm tree also went. And the elm tree is coming back better. It's a little harder to be because the hybridization efforts with elm have produced some really good things. And there's a national elm trial going on now. And if you want to see examples of it, up at Cobleskill, SUNY Cobleskill, they're one of, I think, 12 or 14 places in the nation that are doing the National Elm Trial. And you can see all of the things that they've developed to replace the pure American elm. Good plants. Chestnut is a little harder nut to crack.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's really suffered.
No
it's a very
pun intended.
Sad story. I mean, now every chestnut tree in America is from China or some other place.
Or you still find them. You can easily find in a woodland, you can find the American chestnut. Hmm. What it typically does is it sprouts back from the roots, grows to 20 or 30 feet, then gets a blight and dies.
What is that blight? And are there blights that people should worry about? Or is there anything we can do to avoid that?
Well, unfortunately, that one I don't think could be blamed on transportation from overseas, though maybe it could have. I don't know. It was Ceratocystis. I can't remember the species name. But anyway, it was really serious. The trouble is it invades the circulation system of the tree and destroys the circulation system, the whole circulation system. So that's it for the tree. I mean, it's very hard to save a tree when that happens. The same with Dutch elm disease. They used to think they were closely related fungi. It turns out they're not. But they do the same thing. They clog the circulation system. So those are the worst pathogens. The same is happening now in California with sudden oak death syndrome, which is a phytophthora. And it gets in, basically destroys the circulation system, and the tree is gone. Mm. So some of these are native. We can do a lot by trying to be careful about what we bring into the country from elsewhere. Mm-hmm. More with insect pests. You know, our Asian longhorn beetle pest is entirely owed to importation, largely plant. It came over probably in packing pallets from China.
I was going to ask you if that was timber, like wood that was cut and processed and brought over that had the longhorn beetle?
Yeah, or it was the packing pallets.
Yeah, it's not actually people importing trees per se. It's really...
No, it's the packing, the packing pallets. And that's probably been responsible for our next major insect pest, the emerald ash borer, which is on its way here. It's just in the upper Midwest, has destroyed the ash populations of the upper Midwest and is likely going to do the same here.
What we have is have you come on again. But I mean, you're right, Katie. We should get to some of the big picture.
We want to talk about, I don't want to not promote and at least Dirt. Let people know the fabulous documentary that's coming out based on your book, Dirt, The Ecstatic Skin of the Earth. Tell us a little bit about the documentary and what you guys, what Dirt sort of goes through in terms of like explaining to people how related we are to our soil.
How it's the skin of the earth.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it is the skin of the earth. You know, it used to be when I wrote this book back in the 90s, geologists who were really much more in vogue than people, soil scientists, and probably still are, described
dirt
as
oil.
Well, yeah, but they're also, they're sexy. I mean, McPhee's stuff is sexy. Ancient earth is sexy. Dirt is all young. The dirt that works for us is mostly products of the last ice age. A 500,000-year-old soil is a really old soil and often a nasty one from the point of view of growing plants. My teacher in soils, I would try to get him to tell me what a good soil was. He was probably the great soil scientist who ever lived, a man named Hans Jenny, who was a professor emeritus.
Hans Jenny, Yenny?
Jenny. Extraordinary man. Factors of Soil Formation is his great book.
Of Soil Formation.
And he would, I would say to him, Hans, what makes a good soil? And Hans would try to ignore the question, but finally I asked it enough times. He said, good for what? Because to him, every soil was interesting in the way it developed. And even a poisoned soil, there were soils that have been poisoned in California by too much irrigation. There's a trace element called selenium, which goes all the way down the San Joaquin River and ends up in these marshes, where it's now killing birds.
Wow.
Because so much water has gone through the system. And I said, Hans told me about this. And I said, Hans, that's terrible. He said, yes, I believe they should make it a state park. Because it shows what happens when you do this. You take a trace element and you can concentrate it, even though it's a... Anyway, so...
That'd be funny. Exactly.
I know, because people take selenium as a vitamin supplement. I mean...
And in the right quantity, it is necessary for plant growth.
Right.
In unright quantities, it is not. So a lot of soil, a lot of the study of dirt and soil is about that. Is about the good term in soil is always a middle term. It's not an extreme term. So it's very different from what, we're taught to admire. We're taught to admire the biggest, the greatest, the thisest, the thattest. But soil, it's the middle term.
It is. So who came to you with this idea for a documentary?
Oh, a couple of guys called my sometime agent. She said she wasn't really my agent because she said she can never make any money out of me, but she acted as my agent anyway.
That was nice. And now
she had to
realize virtue has been rewarded.
Her money would come through time. Anyone who's in trees, you can't expect immediate, results. So now, so she came and she said
these guys want to make a movie out of your book. And I said, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And then they called me up and I was trying to figure out which of my friends was disguising his voice. But it wasn't. It was these pair of guys. And I made a few calls, and I found out that they made the governor of California's famous movie, Pumping Iron.
Oh, wow.
And they made they loved Malcolm Lowry as a novelist, so they made a movie version of Under the Volcano.
Uh-huh.
So they made some real movies. They'd really done this.
Yeah, and that Pumping Iron documentary was excellent. I saw that myself several times.
Wait a second, before I get excited here, who the hell are these guys?
Yeah, right. Good
And then they said they would do it, and I thought, will they really do it? And they did.
They did a good job.
They really did. They played.
And what did they interview you? And
they interviewed me, but they also went all over the world talking to people. I was a little concerned because they were talking to people who are not known primarily for thinking about dirt and soils. But they did wonderful, wonderful work with them. So we have, you have to see the movie to see the stories that are told by Wangari Maathai about dirt in Africa and the consequences that happen to people when their soils are destroyed and why their soils are destroyed. And Vandana Shiva talking about her childhood, her favorite job. Every week you have to daub the floors and the walls in a traditional house with a mud and a manure plaster. Mm. And her favorite job was to do that. So we had lots and lots of interesting things, as well as just people here, there, and everywhere doing things with dirt, including they had pictures of us planting trees. They had pictures of the Rikers Island program, this wonderful program that James Giler ran with the people out there talking about that. And also, people who've gotten jobs after going through that program, jobs doing something interesting, useful, and that requires intelligence.
Mm, absolutely. Well, Bill, you have got to come back. We could talk about trees forever, as trees are forever.
And dirt. I'm nowhere near done with the dirt.
And also, what was Sundance? Did you go to Sundance?
Yes, I did. Really? Had like 5 minutes of fame. It was exciting.
And who was in the audience? Did you get a sense? Did you have one premiere, or did they show the movie many times?
They showed it many times, and we were absolutely full every time. It was sold out every showing.
That's wonderful. I bet, because people dig it. No pun intended. They get that it's important.
You intended that.
I did. But if you call it dirt, that is the element of society.
Well, people should know that they can go on to a website for dirt, which I think if you just Google dirt and Bill Logan at the same time, you'll find it.
If I recall, it's dirtthemovie.com.
It's www.dirtthemovie.com. I did go on that site. You'll see what's happening with the movie. You'll maybe even get a little trailer, I think, to it.
Yes.
And it's not in wide release yet, but it's going to be, we hope, it'll be on PBS, I think you told me, very soon.
On Earth, I think this coming Earth Day it will show on PBS. Mm-hmm.
So that'll be in March of 2010.
Yeah. April, I think.
April of 2010. And then theoretically we'll see it in other places, I hope, before
that. And don't overlook trees' importance in one of the great myths of our time.
And do
read
these books.
It was the ants that won the war. everyone that didn't even know they were alive anymore took them for granted, and then they organized.
That's right.
The moving ones, anyway.
Yeah, I remember that.
There were certain
dredging
ants
that up
move.
From my deep dark
dredging.
Past.
That's a pun.
But William Bryant Logan, otherwise known as Bill Logan, please come back and visit us again. It's been great to have you on. In fact, stay for our next guest, because you looked excited about the wrestling thing. And our next guest coming up is Mike Edison.
He talks about other things.
All about wrestling. Bill Logan.
No, he talks about other things.
And
he was the editor of like Hustler magazine. This is a piece of.
And you should see this.
And there's
guy.
A big there's a big thing at Jacob Javik Center on erotica. So, this is
So going from dirt to dirt.
Oh.
Bill Logan, you're a prince. Read the book Oak, and we'll see you next week. And we'll see you in a few minutes. And Bill, you'll be back another time. Thanks again.
Thanks very much.
Smooth.
Yeah, really smooth.
As I was walking down the street, a well-dressed man I chanced to meet. The stranger asked me where I go, and why I wore these clothes so old. I told the man that I was poor, I wasn't rich, I had no stores. He told me, son, I have a plan, I'll put some money in your hand. Said that home the 1st of May, a cart with riches came this way. He said to go and do a deed, and he would share it all with me. I went and did what I was told. We stole the silver and the gold. He tried to take my
share and run. I shot and killed him with my gun. I know I never will be free, and in this cell I lay my head. A few more hours and I'll be dead. I should have seen, I should have known, I should have lived with what I own, and now I'll die.
Well, that was very interesting. I'm happy to know that Bill Logan is going to be coming back. I mean, because we
barely scratched the surface of the dirt.
We were still on an epidermal level, even at the end of the half hour interview.
Absolutely. And we didn't even climb a tree.
And we have our second guest I'm very excited to have back. He's been one of our best guests. I always remember one part of the title of his book, but I always forget the other. The part I always remember is Savage Tales of Pot, Porn, Punk Rock, Pro Wrestling, Talking Apes, Evil Bosses, Dirty Blues, American Heroes, and the Most Notorious Magazines in the World. The first part is, hold on, I have to look at, I have fun everywhere I go.
And you can see why with a subtitle like that. Oh, baby, baby.
It's amazing. Welcome back. I can't remember the subtitle.
Well, first we should say your name is Mike Edison.
My name is Mike Edison.
Yeah,
and
his
welcome
name is
back.
Mike Edison, and welcome back to the Q Report.
And thanks, you know I love being here. I have fun everywhere I go. This is all part of the trip.
This is all part of the trip. So you have had quite a trip. Tell us a little bit. I mean, how did this become your trip? I mean, was it something you were born with, or something you learned about, or did you have a mentor?
By misadventure, nothing premeditated. I think that's why the whole thing works.
Uh-huh.
I just sort of fell into the wrestling thing. Well, there was some LSD involved. I have to say, the whole thing was kind of fueled by some very good drugs, positive drugs, not dark drugs.
I mean,
drugs.
You were saying on your last time that, you know, people think drugs are bad, and yet, like, the military relies on drugs to keep their soldiers going during tough...
The military was one
tough...
of the first experimenters with LSD and psychotropic drugs.
If I had to do
drugs.
Certain things that those soldiers had to do, I would love to have a pill that gives
I would not want to be dropping acid to go out.
We weren't talking about LSD. We were talking about methamphetamine, which I keep saying has gotten such a bad rap.
Shucks. You know where we can get some?
No. Oh, man. You know, well, we were talking about, you know, methamphetamine. Speed was designed to, you know, drive trucks across the country and to win wars and to play the bass in Motorhead. And, you know, if you're doing a lot of speed and tweaking.
Or
watching,
jump over a flight of stairs and break your foot.
There's that, too. But if you're sitting around tweaking, watching daytime TV, of course your teeth are going to fall out. You know, there's a drug that was never supposed to be the activity itself.
You know? Exactly.
We're unlike LSD, which is definitely a, you know, a trip to Paisley's experience. Party land.
Did you ever do those?
Good to sit down.
Did you have those crazy times, Katie?
Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah.
I won't deny it. Did them all. Yep. Many times over.
You're like, in fact, Curtis is buying me some of it right now.
No, Curtis did not do it.
Really?
Yeah, he was a straight boy.
He was a straight and narrow
guy. Yeah, totally.
Guy, huh?
He was a Boy Scout, for God's sake.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Oh, yeah. No, Mr. Straight, totally, like, into architecture school, like, no deviation. I mean, you know, he was just, he didn't even drink. He's been making up for lost time ever since.
I have fun everywhere I go, which you can get in bookstores and stuff. It's an absolute fun book. Tell us about Chapter 6. Louisiana.
Oh, well, that was my first big-time assignment for a porn magazine.
Which one was that?
It was Cherry Magazine, which is part of the family of filth that includes High Society and Celebrity Skin. Playgirl Magazine was upstairs from us, owned by the same people. And Cherry Magazine, which was at the time very known for very big-busted American girls, was very much a magazine.
As opposed to small, there's no magazine devoted to small.
No, there wouldn't
women.
Be. But this was very much Americana.
Even Asian women.
Wait, who was that?
This was an American magazine, if ever there were one.
Just a quick tangent. Who was that woman, guys? Do you know back in the booth who that famous American pinup model was? And we had the gentleman on
Betty Page.
Betty Page.
Oh yeah, Betty Page.
Kind of like
she was not. Betty Page. She was a large busted American.
Who doesn't
girl?
Love Betty Page?
I know.
Yeah.
But
when I got to Cherry, it was after my previous career as a porn novelist. I had written 28 adult novels. No kidding, I banged them out about once a week.
Banged them out.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. you know, we really banged him out. And somehow this catapulted me to a job in the...
Oh, catapulted, indeed.
Yeah, I'm a real corporate ladder climber. Hey, you know, I'll tell you what, after I worked for Cherry, I started working for Screw, and I still thought that was a leg up on the industry.
No question about it. Well, Screw at the time was like the gold standard, right?
Screw was always the best. I love working for Screw, but therein lies the secret to my career.
And Al Goldstein?
You asked about the secret of my career. I started at the top and worked my way down.
I remember Al Goldstein hanging out outside of Tiffany's with his camera.
Absolutely.
He approached me. And for once, I was smart enough to say no.
Yeah, Al could be a poster boy for just say no.
Yeah.
But I was down in Louisiana. It was my first real assignment.
Where did you go? I mean, you flew into Lafayette or New Orleans?
We were in New Orleans. And the idea was to do a story on the girls of New Orleans for Cherry Magazine, which is what we did. We went from town to town.
Do they give you a contact or something?
Yeah. We knew all the girls at all the strip clubs, and they all want to be in the magazine.
Of course.
Because they get in the magazine, which is no trifling feat for some of these girls from Jefferson Parish, and they get to say a scene in Cherry Magazine, and they go on to get more money at the finer go-go clubs in the land.
Mm-hmm. So your means to success.
Exactly. So I think I was 23 years old, added my first credit card.
Dream.
They saddled me with a corporate Cherry credit card and sent me down there with a...
Gave you a budget of about $15 a day.
You know, enough for oysters and beer, you know, and take care of the girls a little bit. And they sent me down with this a short, dyspeptic Chinese photographer who called himself Wally Wang.
Thank you for using the word dyspeptic.
Wally was really great. He was just a stuttering mess. I love Wally. Talented guy. That obviously was his nom de guerre. Although in another life, he was taking commercial photography shots, you know, beauty shots of eyeliner and God knows what else. But Wally Wang, when we were on assignment, we got to New Orleans. I was so excited. I said, Wally, we're going to the club. We're going to get some jambalaya. We're going to meet the girls. Maybe later we'll score some coke. It's going to be great. You know, this is going to be like the best 4 days ever. And he said, you know, Mike, to you, this is New Orleans. But to me, this is Louisiana, and they hate my Chinese ass. We're taking pictures and we're leaving.
Oh, my God. He had a different experience, huh?
Well, 2 days later, we were both going pretty strong with a couple of strippers, both named Bunny. Coincidentally.
Oh, really?
What a surprise.
You sure it wasn't the same girl?
That's the best question I've ever been asked. Yeah, I'm sure. But I'm not sure that their names really were Bunny.
Yeah, that's true, too. So you were down there, and did you produce a good story?
The idea was the Super Bowl was going to be in New Orleans that year, so we had sort of thrown the Super Bowl party. We rented this motel room. We got this football that said Cherry on the side, and some helmets, and... We bought all this like cheap champagne for the girls, who dropped some ecstasy that afternoon, which really kind of fueled the fire a little bit.
Oh, does it ever?
You know, like very I said, the production values wise, this wasn't Gone with the Wind. It wasn't Star Wars.
Right.
It wasn't even Deep Throat. It was more like the Zapruder film. But it was a very pleasant afternoon. One must never underestimate the dramatic impact of a couple of D-cup strippers getting it on in football helmets and heels.
Has New Orleans lost any of its...
I'm speechless at that one.
Well, the best part is I bought all these streamers and all this confetti to make it look like a party, right? You know, to dress up this cheap motel room.
Yeah, great.
And as the girls are getting it on the bed and they're spilling this champagne everywhere, the streamers are bleeding ink on the white sheets.
Beautiful.
Right? So the red just looks like, you know, an unholy bloody mess. It looks like a pig has been slaughtered in there. But the blue is just plain weird, right? Because now it looks like a Smurf has been killed as well as the pig. And there's no way to explain this. And the maid came in the next day and, you know, and dang, I thought she was going to call the X-Files.
Oh, my God.
That was a good weekend.
Oh,
that
was.
And does New Orleans still have this stuff going on? Or is it, I mean...
Have you guys been to New Orleans recently, post-Katrina?
No, I've not.
No. You know, I mean, talk about a great American tragedy.
Possibly the greatest in many ways.
They just let
that city die. They let it die
as they knew it was about to die. I mean, with the week's notice.
They just washed their hands of it, walked away, left everybody hanging there. The only thing that came back was the tourist quarters, right?
Yeah, the tourist quarters seemed up and running. I was there a couple years ago to do a couple gigs, and Bourbon Street was running, you know, maybe, I don't know, about 75%. Mm-hmm. But, you know, down by the river and the places that got wiped out. I mean, there's nothing.
Nothing.
You know, they really should have let the people of New Orleans rebuild their own city. There are so many good, positive ways to do these things. And, you know, the federal government just apparently didn't give a good goddamn.
Exactly.
I mean, look at what we're in. We're in a shipping container. I mean, 10,000 of these would have been more probably money well spent, you know, dropped in
Absolutely.
Various.
Put two of these together, you have a very reasonable little space.
Well, talking about tsunamis and all that, chapter 9, page 117, Made in Japan.
Made in Japan. Well, that was our
what
first.
What is made in Japan?
Well, I was made in Japan, specifically in the hallway of the Star Hotel in Tokyo. Hey, man, there was a party going on in the room. There was no other place left.
Wow.
I was there with my band, the Ronchans. We did about 10 days tour of Japan, Tokyo, and the surrounding areas. The nice thing was the guys knew I worked for High Times, our Japanese friends, mm-hmm. and the punk rockers. Now, you know, drug laws in Japan are harsh. I mean, they're drastic.
Yeah, really?
Oh, yeah, right.
Give us
there
an
is
example.
There is no marijuana in Japan.
What
I mean,
do they do?
I mean, maybe
a
in
drink?
A real... Yeah, oh boy, they drink.
Yeah, I've heard
they drink. But the marijuana culture, I mean, maybe on some real subterranean level exists, but the laws are very harsh. You know, they locked up Paul McCartney for 9 days when he was getting busted. What do you think they were going to do to me?
Throw away
at
the
least
key,
18.
Man.
But these kids, they knew we were into smoking weed, and you know, the whole culture is based on being polite. It's a really wonderful culture. As such, it's really about very common and very obvious consideration. You know, please to carry your guitar, Mr. Edison. And when you're sitting down to drink, you know, it's custom. You never let someone's drink get their glass get empty. If you see their glass is less than half fill, you know, you refill it. And so you have a bunch of people getting shit-faced drunk, but you're just saying thank you the whole time. So no fights.
There's
general camaraderie and bonhomie all the way around. These guys got a bag of weed for us. It was a towering accomplishment. Mm-hmm. You have to understand, for someone to score some weed in Tokyo, they were so proud, and it was the worst marijuana ever.
Really?
It was like topsoil. I mean, it was dirt.
Wait a second. No, wait. Dirt's a good thing.
Yeah, well, I'll try to
not
smoke
to
it.
Not to smoke.
Yeah. And, you know, but of course they couldn't find any rolling papers because that's not part of the culture. So
they give you a potato pipe?
Well, yeah, some weird Japanese Tampax inserter trying to turn into a pipe. And, you know, but you can't be rude. You have to smoke it, and you have to tell them that
just
it's fantastic.
Say thank you.
Yeah.
Of course. I guess the real punchline to the story is when I got back to New York, I wrote a story for High Times about my experience in Japan, scoring the worst marijuana of all time.
And being so happy.
You know, and being happy and having to be polite. And these kids were so happy, you know, to be smoking the marijuana. One of the guys said, you know, Japanese people are very hungry for marijuana and, you know, glad to have us there to, you know, teach them how to smoke it out of a, you know, Tampax inserter.
In America, we're hungry because of marijuana.
And the editor, the music editor at High Times, this like depraved old hippie named Steve Bloom, turned my story upside down. He rewrote it on me. And suddenly the story became, the story actually ended, our Japanese friends came to New York and visited us later. Mm-hmm. And we scored them some like dynamite weed. And we all had like a proper tea party.
And they passed out.
But the guy edited the story and forgot about the part about the weed in Japan. And then they came to New York and I scored them some bad weed. Mm. Right. And it's like, which totally humiliating story for me. Not the way it was. And I said, Steve, you know, not only have you butchered my story, but it's not even the truth. And he told me, well, it's a funnier story this way, Edison. You know, and I said, Steve, there are a lot of things, you know, I'm good at, and scoring weed in New York is one of them. This is like really embarrassing. And this would be one of the things I kept in mind a few years later when I got hired to be the publisher of High Times and became his boss.
Not very good. Now, wait a second. Didn't you once win an editorship position thanks to a wrestling match?
Yeah, that's the way this whole thing gets started. Wow. That's when I dropped out of college for the first time, a friend of mine who was a journalism student and avoided the usual route of trying to get an internship at the Village Voice or New York Magazine or, you know, one of these plum gigs, went right down market and got a gig at a wrestling magazine.
Wow. Beautiful.
And before he knew it, all his friends were writing for the magazine. And before long, I was like, you know, scribbling like, you know, 7 stories a month under 7 different bylines. I was Ted Pipe. I was Mick Wilde, Monica Lisbon, mm-hmm. when I needed a woman's point of view.
Beautiful.
And he was he was about had it, and he was about ready to take off and move on to the next thing. And he was a good guy. He was a do-gooder, Hulkamaniac, flag-waving, good guy, babyface, as we call in the business, the guy with the white hat. And I was a bad guy, a heel. And I, you know, I champion obviously all the bad guy wrestlers, the rule breakers, the cheaters. And
give
whatnot.
Us an example of one of the great rule breaker cheaters.
Stan Hansen, one of my favorites. People use brass knuckles, a roll of quarters.
Yeah.
You know, I keep a list at home. It's the best things to hit someone over the head with.
A roll of quarters.
Well, that would be on the list.
They're
of best
heavy.
Foreign objects.
Yeah,
you know, the old days.
What are
days,
the other dirty tricks that they use?
Oh, some of my favorite, throwing talcum powder in someone's eyes. Wow.
How do you
or
do
salt,
that?
Like some of the old Japanese wrestlers did. Well, you have a confederate, your manager will hand you the package of the medicated powder or the salt, or you keep it in your boot or your trunks.
So as you step out into the middle of the ring to, you know, go for your first hold, you've
it usually happens in dramatic fashion towards the end of the match, where there's a giant white cloud of which there is no survival. You know, probably the greatest cheater rule breaker of all time was the original Sheik from Detroit, who wrestled in the 70s.
Iron Sheik?
It was before the Iron Sheik. And part of the great tradition of evil Arab wrestlers. And he could throw a fireball. I mean, seriously, he would metabolize fire and burn someone's eyes off with this. I mean, you see this, and then people still wonder, is it fake?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
is that blood fake?
You know, well, the blood's not fake. The blood is never fake in wrestling.
Right,
you know, you would know in a second if
but
the blood was fake.
But neither are the third degree burns.
I mean, you know, some crazy Arab from Detroit who can throw fire. You tell me.
That's a good trait.
How
to
do
have.
You throw fire?
Not to
be too prosaic here.
Gotta ask the Sheik.
We'll have
trait
him
secret.
On one day.
His other big move was attacking someone with like a fork.
Now, are these guys, do they have a lower lifespan? Because, I mean, like, look at the NFL.
The average lifespan of a wrestler. God,
well, that would
question.
Be really interesting because the NFL had a very dirty job, which was to look back at the people that had built it into the league that it is today and realize a lot of them were dying in their 50s and 60s because of the concussions they had
had.
It's
a bone-crushing sport, the NFL.
Yeah.
That's a tough league.
The little leather helmets in the 30s through the 60s.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
well, boxers, too. That's another sport where you take a lot of punishment and has a lot of dirty tricks to it.
Are there any organizations there that look back?
A veterans group for wrestlers? Boy, oh, boy. You know, talk about one industry that will never
Kennedy?
Unionize.
Where is one Kennedy? Where is Kennedy
and there's,
now?
And there's no home for indigent wrestlers.
No. And it's just sad. You know, the movie The Wrestler was very accurate in a lot of ways about just sort of where a guy could end up. You know, I mean, it's a very unforgiving business. Show business is very unforgiving.
Yeah, in general, right?
Were you a consultant for the wrestler?
Riding high in April, shot down in May. I mean, absolutely. You could be a legend one day and a has-been the next.
Yeah, sure. You're only as good as your last fight.
Yeah, and you know what the promoter wants to give you the push in their politics and everything else. I mean, I think it's a good business, but certainly the number of dead wrestlers. I mean, real, you know, guys who were heroic and hard workers and great entertainers. And yeah, a lot of them are
Mike,
dead.
Wait a minute. You cannot tell me that a wrestler is a great entertainer.
Are you kidding?
What?
No.
Katie, we have a sound effect for you.
Okay, put one on.
That's awesome.
That's only because you like, did you wrestle when you were in high school?
That's
Patrick?
Awesome. Can I do that?
No, but Junkyard Dog and all these people, first of all, if anything, they are entertainers. That's the one thing that they are. They might not be.
I'm not saying they're not entertainers, but I'm questioning the hierarchy of entertainment here.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Popular culture is a very important thing.
I'll tell you what. Millions of people every year pony up $50 to watch the pay-per-view of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a good yardstick by which to measure whether someone's WWE,
my generation's
World Wrestling Entertainment.
Jimmy Fly Snuka, the Iron Sheik, the Beverly Hobo.
Sure.
I mean, these are all semi.
So you're watching these guys regularly?
When I was, yes. I mean, I still would. If there was a revival and they all came back, 100%.
And what is it, the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation?
WWE now, once they got sued by the Panda. The WWF.
Who is it? Jim McMahon?
Right. Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon.
The greatest visionary of our time.
Oh, my God. Vince McMahon started a league to compete with the NFL. I mean, he started a whole... I mean, this is a guy that was always tapping at the door of...
Bill, do you watch wrestling?
No, but I watch the guys train. I used to train in boxing at Gleason's, and there's a ring for wrestlers there.
Okay.
It's a tremendous skill.
It is.
They would
my
practice
nephew
again
is
and again,
is a
jumping off the ropes,
wrestler.
Doing all the stuff so as not to hurt themselves or the other people and be able to get up and do it again.
That's right. You work 300 nights, 300 sometimes 365 nights a year.
It's
for
that
a few dollars.
Sometimes in the old day you'd work 360 nights a year and sometimes two shows on Saturday.
Do you
and
get
you
injured
get
as much as you do, as much as in boxing?
The idea is to come out of it and work again the next night. I mean, boxing, I mean, the great thing about wrestling is that it's fake. Yeah, boxing, I don't like the word
fake.
Every
4 months.
It's acrobatic. The fact that when you wake up in the morning and you know you're going to get hit over the head with a chair, and you know you're going to get, you know, raked over the forehead with barbed wire, or you're going to fall off a cage 30 feet, it doesn't make it any less painful.
Didn't you see the wrestler?
No, I did not.
You know, he should have won the Oscar. I mean, I think when Sean Penn... I mean, not to say that it's about him, but I mean, it is a real...
Are you doing a Kanye West thing here?
No, but that is a big enough part of society. I mean, if that was so marginalized,
I don't know. I mean, I worked with Teddy Atlas on a project, and believe me, you know, boxing was something that he felt strongly was didn't get enough airplay on television or in the papers, and did he perceive, even though he's been worked with the greatest fighters in the world, saw something as kind of on the margins of the professional sports world.
Well, absolutely.
I think wrestling is definitely a marginal sport.
Well, it's not a sport in that it's scripted, and yet it requires athletics and talent.
I would really not call it marginal, just based on the sheer numbers and the business that they do.
Okay, so let's hear it. What are the numbers?
And it may not enter your radar screen for whatever reason, because, you know, wrestling's a weird thing. It splits crowds.
Yeah, it's a guy thing a little bit.
Totally a guy thing.
It's a soap opera for boys, of course it is. But what I always say is...
Soap opera for boys.
It's like what Dostoevsky had to say about faith. If you get it, no explanation is necessary, and if you don't, no explanation will do. It really is a crowd splitter.
Ooh, did you get that, Heather, in the tag card? That works for a lot of things.
Tag Dostoevsky. but no
Has
kidding.
Has he been tagged before?
Honestly, I think my father was more upset when I was working for wrestling magazines than I was working for porn magazines. It was considered more down market. It was just so embarrassing. He considered wrestling fans, you know, toothless hillbillies, you know,
which, by the way,
a very uneducated class. But, you know, apparently, you know, pornography had, you know, percolated up into his world. You know, sex was okay.
No, and you know, there's a whole history
there. Sex is universal.
I mean, Buffalo Bill and all those things. I mean, a lot of people went to those, and yet they were the beginning. It was like popular entertainments, you know. It was Coney Island all the way
through.
Yeah. That is a big...
I understand the historical aspect of it, but I'm...
And this is a modern version of it, just like this, you know, cage boxing and all that, although that seems maybe more closer to real boxing or whatever.
People actually seriously hurt themselves doing that.
That's a gladiator battle. That's a throwback to ancient Rome.
You die.
That goes all the way back, doesn't it? Well, all right. Well, I just want to know, Brutus... I always thought he was wrong. You, on page 237, are saying he's right. Well, Brutus was right. Why?
Well, not that you're taking too out of context, because he killed Caesar for what I assume was his crime of wearing sandals at the office.
I mean, it wasn't the toga?
I think he was wearing jellies, by the way.
Very, very specific to my aversion to the male sandal, the male flip-flop.
I think he was wearing jellies. I think history proved that. So what, Brutus was right to kill a man for wearing...
I'm not under the male sandal. You know what, one of my pet peeves is just a lack of civility is the way people dress on airplanes these days. When they go, you know, they go to fly. You know, long time ago...
They dressed
up. You would dress up to go on an airplane.
Right? And I'm sitting next to some guys wearing, like, you know, shower thongs and shorts. It's like, you know, what the hell?
This is special. You could die on this plane.
Exactly. My last thing I'm going to see is this guy's toes. It's like, it's, to use my favorite word, icky. That's icky.
Talk about a lack of civilization.
Exactly. Oh, we've come so far.
Really. We should all be wearing our blunnies, obviously, when we get on the plane.
I mean, this is we're going to have Mike. I mean, I have one more.
Oh, Mike, you have to be a regular. They're just too good, man.
I do have one more.
I love you guys, and I love everything you're up to and everything Roberto's is up to. I'm absolutely behind the cause. The movement, such as it is.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Well, if we can bring in an audience based on your extraordinary track record.
I'm going to turn that beer tent back there into a wrestling ring.
Yeah, really?
Oh, I would love to see it. And we could see if organic food really does make you stronger.
That's right. That's right. We could have the velodrome next door and the wrestling ring right here.
Never mind the deadlines. Chapter 14, page 193. Is that your high times?
Yeah. Yeah. You would think after putting out a magazine for 25 years that monthly deadlines would cease to be a novelty.
I always said, he was always saying, these guys that work for me, I mean, how could you get them to like stick to
you know what it was like? It was like one of those Discovery Channel documentaries where they slow everything down so you can see how the animal's legs work.
There was a very funny movie, I forget what it was. It was like some cop ones were there. They stopped some guy for driving and they were like, do you know how fast you were going? And he was like, officer, I don't think. He was like, 7. 7 miles an hour.
Well, the joke at High Times is like, it's okay to drive stone. It's not like drunken driving, we're getting a wreck. If you drive stone, you just miss the exit.
Yeah, exactly.
And I posit that's a problem also.
Yeah, but only for you. Yeah. Just adds a little to your mileage.
So what's going on? Do you have any new projects you're working
on? Yeah, well, this week I got something pretty happening. It's my second annual Banned Book Party.
Banned?
B-A-N-N-E-D with two ends, as in banned and censored, obscene books. And it's the American Library Association's Banned Book Week, which is a tradition they've had, which celebrates, in reverse, an awful tradition of banning books and censoring books and trying to block publications, and also groups that challenge books, who call libraries and say, we don't want you to think you should carry this book.
Sure.
And this ranges from everything from, Darwin to Harry Potter.
That's right.
And of course, Tropic of Cancer and obscenity. There's so many books that were banned, or of course, Howl is probably one of the more famous obscenity trials. Naked Lunch, there was a very famous obscenity
trial.
Thurston
Howell?
I was going to let that one go right by. It looked huge coming over the plate, but I'm not going to swing.
Yeah, thanks,
I wonder how many porn movies are based on Gilligan's Island.
Oh my God, a lot.
There can't be enough.
God, where were they? Marianne and Ginger.
Oh, yeah.
And the professor was nailing them both, right?
I think the professor was getting
he
all
was
the,
just, it was a free-for-all for him. I mean, what was his competition?
Yeah, the skipper.
Gilligan.
Hey, guy could build a ham radio out of coconuts. That's hot.
Yeah.
So we're going to be doing the Banned Book Party this week at The Word in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
Where is that?
Thursday night's on Franklin Street.
Franklin.
The Word. You can certainly find it on the interwebs. Banned Book Party, The Word in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. This Thursday, 7:30 p.m. And also Saturday night in Metuchen, New Jersey, my hometown, on Main Street in Metuchen at a great bookstore called Raconteur. Really one of the best bookstores I've ever been into.
Raconteur.
And we'll be there talking about banned books. And it ends with the Name That Banned Book contest, which I'll be reading from various obscene and filthy literature.
Do you have any authors on hand to talk about their contributions to the banned book list?
In Thursday, I'll be joined by Lizzie Skernick, who's a fantastic young adult author. Mm-hmm. And why books get challenged all the time, especially this recent trend of vampire books.
Yeah.
You can bet a lot of Christians aren't into this. I mean, Harry Potter, every single one of those books was routinely challenged by religious groups.
Really? In England?
Boy warlocks.
No,
and
in
satanic,
this country.
This country?
Oh my God, yes.
There are anti-Harry Potter
There's a lot more banned books happening in the United States than there are happening overseas.
Did they ever try to ban Lord of the Rings or anything?
And challenged books too. I mean, sometimes they don't get banned because there's no such thing as a national censorship board. But what some people don't realize or forget is that obscenity is not protected speech. Obscenity is based on community standards, what's known as the Miller test, which came about with some porn magazines. And actually, it was a famous porn trial, and the defendant was acquitted because in a community where there were strip bars and everyone was reading filth, it's hard to prosecute someone for putting out a porn magazine. But that's it. And there are still obscenity trials in America. There was one just last year. It had to do with this sort of what's called extreme pornography, which is just awful.
Weren't they questioning Darwin for a while?
The whole idea
of creationism being taught in the schools. I mean, you're looking right there at a really excellent example of banned books.
Just a small,
And in the opposite direction, every day you see some football team that's holding prayer meetings or going to church functions. There was a down south football class trip that took the kids to be baptized. And of course, that's being challenged, as a separation of church and state. I mean, it happens all the time.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, we think we're so sophisticated. And yet, I drove to West Virginia a few years ago with a friend of mine. I mean, it is a very different place. And that's just a few hours drive. I mean,
we have a very distorted view, I think. We live in New York City.
Nothing about West Virginia to
even
be critical of it. I'm
coast.
Just saying that.
I mean, I think if you live on the coastal states or in the Northeast or you live on the West Coast.
But that's why I like saying West Virginia.
We're basically three separate countries. Yeah.
West Virginia is almost a coastal state. And yet, it has chosen to.
And it's not that far from D.C., where you have a very sophisticated population. But it's.
I think it has fascinating secrets, too. But it just, you can't,
marijuana is the biggest cash crop in West Virginia, though. Did you know that?
Is it?
Yep.
Well, we will be broadcasting from West
Virginia.
Little
valleys. And you might try to pick up some heritage breeds there, baby.
Well, we had, actually, it was funny. The week I went, someone had, these two female campers had just been killed. And my friend and I were in my little VW Bug, which we had to push to get to 3 or 5 miles an hour just so we could kick it
in
their gear. So we, of course, looked suspicious leaving every gas station. And it was right on the weekend when these girls had died. So. Anyway, well, rest in peace. And this was a very, very interesting Sunday. We had Anna Zoietas.
From the main course.
Then we had Bill Logan talking about trees, and Bill will be back.
And his wonderful books, Dirt and Oak.
And Mike Edison, who talked a little bit about his book, but you could come back a million times as well.
Oh, I think for different we'll have reasons. To make a regular slot for Mike. You're my just pleasure. Way too much fun.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I was laughing a lot. So
it's not much I won't do for a pizza.
especially one as good as the birds.
I have fun everywhere I go, published by...
By the great people at Faber and Faber.
Yeah.
Now in paperback.
A subsidiary of FSG, for heaven's sake.
And on your inside cover, Roberta's, the lovely Roberta's, is hosting an event with the Liberty Science Center. And it's called Give, Grow, and Eat. And that's date, October 13th, 7 p.m. So look at the Roberta's website or come to Roberta's and find out more about that great event.
Awesome. And I hope everyone will visit me at MikeEdison.com.
MikeEdison.com. Well, we were produced by Nat Wiener.
We were produced by Heather Hyman.
Oh, yeah, Heather Hyman.
By the excellent Nat Wiener.
Great job, Heather Hyman.
Yep, Heather. And our sponsor today was
Texer. Best place for Macintoshes in the whole city. Thank you to Texer.
And thank you to the Heritage Radio Network.
Great job, Katie.
Yeah,
see you next week.
Yep, you betcha.
Been too long time, I got nothing done. Too many words, too little action.